You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
A very good evening and a very warm welcome to that podcast on Money Control, which has always promised to keep you updated with the world in about 20 minutes. And we will continue to do that today as well. It is the 6th of June 2019. On the 6th of June 1944, the Normandy landings happened, which were the landing operations of the Allied invasion of Normandy in Operation Overlord during World War II. It was codenamed Operation Neptune, and we all know it as D-Day. And today happens to be the 75th anniversary of that wonderful day, which began the liberation of German-occupied France from Nazi control and went on to lay the foundations of the Allied forces' victory on the Western Front. It was the largest seaborne invasion in history, and world leaders across the world have been celebrating that very day. And almost coincidentally, I watched Dunkirk. I had never seen the film yesterday. Dunkirk was not, of course, related to the Normandy landings, but what a great film. Speaking of war films, I can also make one more recommendation, Paths of Glory by Stanley Kubrick. Wonderful war film. Do watch it. It was not about the World War, the first one at least. It was about another war where we question what constitutes loyalty to a country. What are the ethical questions we face during a war? But you don't want to know all of that. You want to know what happened in the world. And that's precisely what I'll do starting right now, right here on Money Control. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and this is Stories of the Day.
Editor's Pick of the Day.
All right, let's start with the big one. The Reserve Bank of India's MPC, that is the Monetary Policy Committee, led by Governor Shaktikant Das, today unanimously lowered key lending rate, or repo rate, by 25 basis points, or 0.25%, to now 5.75%, the lowest in 9 years. The six-member committee also changed the policy stance to accommodative from neutral. Repo rate is, of course, the interest rate at which commercial banks borrow short-term funds from the Reserve Bank of India. The rate cut comes after official data last month showed that the country's GDP, or gross domestic product, about which we have done a digging deeper today, so do listen to that, grew 5.8% in the quarter ended March 31st. And that meant that India lost its status as the fastest growing major economy to China, which clocked a growth of 6.4% in this three-month period. So, what does this MPC meeting say, and what else did we find out? It has lowered its GDP growth target for FY 2019-2020 to 7% from 7.2% in April. The consumer inflation for the first half of financial year 2019-2020 has been pegged in the range of 3 to 3.1%, with risks evenly balanced, the RBI went on to note in this bi-monthly policy installment. Many economists had expected the central bank to switch to an accommodative stance, and that is precisely what the MPC has done. And this is the third time in a row that we've seen rate cuts come out of the MPC. And how did the stock market react to this piece of news? Well, not particularly well. Sensex tanked over 500 points in today, extending its losses even after the RBI decided to cut the repo rate by 25 basis points, or 0.25%. It was largely dragged down by bank and financial services stocks, which traded lower. A downward revision of FY20 GDP growth forecast and no major measures to address the liquidity conditions for NBFCs, that is non-banking financial companies, dented sentiment, according to experts. Nifty Bank alone cracked more than 700 points, breaking below 31,000, and it was largely weighed down by Bank of Baroda, IndusInd Bank, IDFC First, Yes Bank, Punjab National Bank, among others. The thing is, the market had already factored in a rate cut of 25 basis points, and it was very much in line with the expectation of the market. And had it been 50 basis points, or 0.5%, perhaps the market would have sung a different tune today. Most experts that we spoke to said this was along expected lines. Ranjan Chakravarti of MSE told Money Control a 25 basis points rate cut falls short of what is required with a delayed and expected insufficient monsoon. This cut is a mild inflation tamer, but not the big growth-driving rate cut that the economy now needs. Unquote. Sticking to news from the RBI, the RBI today said it has done away with charges on fund transfers through RTGS and NEFT, that's NEFT routes, to boost digital transactions and asked banks to pass on the benefits to customers. What is RTGS? Real-time gross settlement system is meant for large value instantaneous fund transfers, and NEFT, as you might all know, is National Electronics Funds Transfer, which is used for funds transfers of up to 2 lakh rupees. The country's largest bank, that is SBI, charges between 1 rupee and 5 rupees for NEFT transactions and between 5 and 50 rupees for the RTGS route. In a statement on developmental and regulatory policies after the MPC meeting, the RBI said it levies minimum charges on banks for transactions routed through RTGS and NEFT systems for fund transfers. Banks levy these charges on their customers. And now, apparently, this is gone. Reuters has reported that India plans to order taxi aggregators like Uber and Ola to convert 40% of their fleet of cars to electric by April 2026, according to a source and records of government meetings to discuss new rules for clean mobility. Uber and Ola, both backed by SoftBank, would need to start converting their fleet as early as next year to achieve 2.5% electrification by 2021, 5% by 2022, 10% by 2023, before hiking it to 40%, according to the person and the records that have been reviewed by Reuters. Some taxi players, like Ola, have previously tried to operate electric cars in India, but with little success, given inadequate infrastructure and high costs. So how this will take place over the course of the next few years is interesting to watch. In what is certainly the end of an era, software services exporter Wipro said today that founder Azim Premji would retire as executive chairman and managing director by the end of July, and has named chief executive officer, that is Abid Ali Nimuchwala, as its new MD. Azim Premji, India's second richest man and well-known philanthropist, has led Wipro's evolution from a vegetable oil company founded in 1946 into a global IT giant. Premji, who's been at the helm for more than 50 years, said in a statement, and I quote, "It has been a long and satisfying journey for me. As I look into the future, I plan to devote more time to focus on our philanthropic activities," unquote. Azim Premji's son, Rishad Premji, will become executive chairman for a period of 5 years, Wipro went on to say. He will stay on as non-executive director, the Bangalore-based company went on to say. Wipro, which entered the IT products business in 1982, caters, as we know, to some of the world's biggest banks and healthcare companies, and of course, competes with TCS and Infosys. Now is as good a time as any to remind ourselves that Azim Premji had only in March recently announced that he has raised his commitment for philanthropy by renouncing more of his personal assets and earmarking them to his Azim Premji Foundation endowment. The Wipro chairman did this by additionally earmarking all economic benefits for philanthropic purposes in about 34% of the shares in Wipro, which was then valued at about $7.5 billion or 52,750 crore rupees, held by certain entities controlled by him. This was, of course, in addition to his earlier donations, which included Wipro's shares and other assets owned by him. And with that latest action in March, the value of the philanthropic endowment contributed by Azim Premji was about 1.45 trillion rupees or $21 billion, including 67% of the economic ownership of Wipro. Some good work from Azim Premji right there, and we wish him a happy retirement. Union Minister Nitin Gadkari, in his second innings, has lined up big plans, according to a report on PTI, from infusing 15 trillion rupees in highways to propelling GDP growth by globalizing khadi and MSME products. After taking charge of Road Transport and Highways and MSME Ministry, Gadkari, in an interview to PTI, said the mission ahead was to further propel the country's economic growth through concerted efforts, be it in highways or MSME. He said to PTI, and I quote, "The blueprint for highways is already in place. We plan to take up work worth at least 15 trillion rupees in highways. That includes building 22 green expressways, rolling out all stuck projects in the next 100 days, and creating a grid of roads at par with the power grid," unquote. According to the latest reports, the government is likely to announce an infusion of about 4,000 crore rupees in three public sector general insurance companies to shore up their capital. The capital infusion will help them improve their financial health to an extent that the proposed merger of the general insurance firms could take place, sources said. The announcement to this effect could be made in the first full-fledged budget of Modi 2.0, which will be presented in the Parliament on the 5th of July. According to the sources, the Department of Financial Services will seek around 4,000 crore rupees in the budget for fund infusion in three insurance companies: National Insurance Company, Oriental Insurance Company, and United India Insurance Company. Depending on the capital that the budget provides, individual allocation would be made, the sources went on to say. The profitability of many general insurance companies, including that of state-owned ones, has been under pressure owing to rising underwriting losses and higher claims. In a Money Control exclusive, Prince Matthews Thomas writes that JSW Steel is considering a bid for British Steel, the bankrupt steelmaker, which was until 2016 a part of Tata Steel's European operations. Sources close to the development told Money Control that the Sajjan Jindal-led company has been approached by British Steel's representatives. JSW Steel is considering the option as British Steel could come at a very low price and wouldn't put pressure on its leverage. At the same time, a possible deal will give JSW Steel access to steelmaking facility in developed markets, said a senior industry executive from the industry. The deadline to submit bids, the June 12th earlier, for British Steel has been pushed to the end of the month to let more suitors come in. So by the end of June, we'll know who have been the bidders, and it appears that JSW Steel is going to be one of them. This is the era of digital wallets and cashless transactions. Let's find out what the numbers are. According to some latest reports on the Economic Times, Google Pay has swept past other UPI systems, that is Unified Payments Interfaces, clocking over 240 million transactions worth 55,000 crore rupees in May 2019. The tech giant digital wallet and payments platform topped Flipkart-owned PhonePe's 230 million transactions, which were worth 44,000 crore rupees, Paytm's 200 million transactions worth about 38,000 crore rupees, and Bharat Interface for Money, that is Bheem's 15.7 million transactions, according to the Economic Times. So, it is Google Pay, then PhonePe, then Paytm, and then Bheem. Business story is done. Let's find out what else is happening in the rest of the country. NDTV has reported that West Bengal Chief Minister Mamata Banerjee met with poll whiz Prashant Kishore, whose latest success was Project Jagan Mohan Reddy in Andhra Pradesh. After a reported two-hour meeting in Kolkata, Mamata Banerjee has signed up for Prashant Kishore's election-winning package, as NDTV calls it. The Chief Minister is believed to be desperate for some PK, that is Prashant Kishore magic, after her Trinamool Congress nosedived from 34 to 22 seats in the 42-seat Bengal in the parliamentary election. The BJP, which had two earlier, shot up to 18 seats, establishing its growing base in the state and making it clear it would not stop until it ousted the Trinamool in the next assembly election, which is due in 2021. After the election, the Chief Minister, or Didi as she is famously known, is coming across as flustered and rattled by the BJP's Jai Shri Ram chants, as NDTV reports. Mamata Banerjee reportedly wanted Prashant Kishore's dream team even back in 2016, but he was reluctant then, having just bagged the Congress contract for the 2017 Uttar Pradesh election. Will PK magic work? Will it stem the tide of the rise of BJP in Bengal? Is, of course, a matter of time. The big election may be over, but the fallout of the election continues on. According to another report on NDTV, the misery of the Congress deepened today, courtesy Telangana, where 12 of its 18 state legislators appear to be on a flight path to Chief Minister K. Chandrasekhar Rao and his party, the TRS, reports Uma Sudhir for NDTV. State leaders of the Congress, the handful that are keen to remain with the Congress, said that the Chief Minister, that is KCR, is buying Congress lawmakers. Undaunted, the dozen rebels say that they want to merge with KCR's outfit. Gandhara Venkata Ramana Reddy said, and I quote, "All the 12 members support the leadership of Chief Minister KCR and requested to work with him. We gave a representation to the Speaker and urged him to merge us with the TRS party." The Congress, of course, has been lurching from one crisis to another since its performance in the general election. It did get 52 seats, but it was simply not enough. In Telangana, the party won 3 of the 17 Lok Sabha seats, and it was seen as a revival of its fortunes in the southern state, given that only a few months ago it had done very badly in the state election, which was, of course, won easily by KCR. According to a horrifying report on IANS, a 2.5-year-old girl was strangled to death and her eyes gouged out after her parents allegedly failed to repay a loan of 10,000 rupees. Two of the accused have been arrested, according to the police. The incident took place in Tappal town in Uttar Pradesh. According to reports, the girl's body was found on the 2nd of June in a dumping ground near her house, 3 days after she went missing. Reportedly, the mutilated body was discovered after a pack of stray dogs had been spotted carrying what appeared to be human body parts. According to the police, the two accused, identified as Zahid and Aslam, were neighbors of the girl who was murdered. That was frankly shocking, and I'm still reeling from having just read that out to you. But there is more news. Mumbai, by the way, is the most traffic congested city in the world, and Delhi the fourth, according to a new report, and people from Bangalore are rejoicing at the thought. We get a bad rap, for sure, as the most congested city in this country. But according to this report, it is Bombay or Mumbai. Mumbai is the most traffic congested city according to Traffic Index 2018, which is compiled by an independent location technology specialist called TomTom. According to this report, after Mumbai, next in the global rankings were Bogota, which is in Colombia. Lima in Peru came next, and then came New Delhi, and then Moscow, making up the top five congested cities in the world. With Moscow taking the lead in Europe, Istanbul came a close second there. Bucharest in Romania was after that, and then St. Petersburg and Kiev. Brussels, London and Paris were all after that. Among North American cities, Mexico City, Los Angeles, whose traffic is awful, Vancouver, New York and San Francisco came after. I don't see Bangalore's name here anywhere, and that is making me slightly happy, I won't lie. All right, let's turn to international business news now. The United States on Wednesday barreled closer to imposing tariffs on all Mexican imports as a high-stakes negotiations at the White House failed to immediately resolve President Trump's demand that Mexico prevent a surge of Central American migrants from flowing across the southwestern border. Trump on Twitter on Wednesday evening said that it was not nearly enough progress had been made, and warned that if no agreement is reached, tariffs at the 5% level will begin on Monday with monthly increases as per schedule. Now, he has threatened that if Mexico doesn't prevent all of these people from coming into the American territory, he will start charging Mexican products 5% now, going all the way up to 25% by October. New figures, which were released yesterday, did show that illegal border crossings have risen to a 7-year high, underscoring the roots of the president's rage. But political resistance to Mr. Trump's tariff threat has also intensified. Many skeptical Republican senators, his own party, the first time they've spoken up, kids were placed in cages, they said nothing. Transgender people were denied the right to serve in the military, they said nothing. The man has behaved abominably, they have said nothing. But now it might come to pinch their pockets, and now they're speaking. Republican senators said they would ask to directly speak to the president before he takes any action, which could shake the economies of both countries. And apparently it will. The prices of several commodities, including your avocados, are going to go up. Prices of clothing likely to go up if these tariff wars go on happening. Trump obviously only recently has also threatened that he's going to impose tariffs on $300 billion more worth of goods from China. And then this Mexican thing is happening on the side. So while he's traveling in Europe, doing D-Day things and committing all the faux pas in the world when it comes to his visit in the United Kingdom, he's also carrying on with these things. Meanwhile, in the automobile world news coming out from the West, apparently the talks between Fiat Chrysler and Renault have fallen apart. The offer of a 50-50 merger appealed in an industry that is already facing a lot of challenges, but the French government and Nissan had a few questions which could not be answered, and it is unlikely that this deal is moving forward. And in other auto sector related news, it has come to be that Ford is closing its long-running engine plant in Bridgend in Wales. This, of course, it comes to be another blow to the UK auto industry. We have already seen that Jaguar Land Rover sales have been plummeting. Even this month, May 2019 sales have not been impressive. Nissan and Honda were among the other car makers who have also said they'll close plants or scale back plans in the United Kingdom. And this, of course, in the background also of Fiat have withdrawing its Renault merger offer. The Italian carmaker reversed its plan to create what would have been the world's third largest automaker in a €33 billion or $37 billion merger deal, saying it was unable to reach an agreement with the French government. Renault shares, of course, tumbled in Paris on Thursday morning today. What else is happening in the rest of the world? President Vladimir Putin and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping are going to be meeting at the new St. Petersburg International Economic Forum, which I suppose is Russia's answer to Davos. Putin said yesterday that Sino-Russian relations were at an unprecedented level. What else is happening? Well, opioid maker Insys has agreed to pay a $225 million settlement. The drug maker admitted to bribing doctors to prescribe Supsis, which is a spray used to treat pain in cancer patients and which contains fentanyl. The deal is part of the federal government's efforts to curb the opioid epidemic, which had claimed 47,600 lives in 2017. Speaking of other public health hazards, the United States has hit a new milestone, this time in the world of measles. If you've seen Veep, you will know that this is Jonah Ryan all over again. The Center for Disease Control has recorded 1,001 cases this year, the highest number since 1992, about a decade before the disease was declared eliminated in the United States. Health officials have blamed the spike in part on parents refusing to vaccinate their children. I will never understand this breed of people who will say vaccines are bad for the health of their children, it'll cause autism, etc., etc. There is simply no proof for it, and the initial study which claimed this has been debunked several times over, and yet here we are in the United States, one of the most developed nations in the world, with 1,001 cases of measles this year alone. God save that country. As usual now, a quick tech roundup. Google employees are speaking out against using the hashtag NoPrideInYT or NoPrideInYouTube after YouTube has been slow to punish a right-wing creator for using homophobic slurs. YouTube's decision on Tuesday not to remove videos featuring the harassment of Carlos Maza by Steven Crowder has elicited a backlash. Now, what are these names? Carlos Maza is, of course, a video producer on Vox. You might have seen him on videos doing explainers and things like that, openly gay. And Steven Crowder is a right-wing YouTuber who's been blasting video after video using homophobic slurs and racist rants against Maza. That is Carlos Maza of Vox. And there were calls for YouTube to take down Crowder's videos, but it hasn't done it. What they've said is, we will stop paying him for the videos. That is, the ad revenue is not going to be given to him, but that is simply not enough for a lot of people who say YouTube needs to do a whole lot more. It would stop, just a suspending monetization of Crowder, that is the right winger's account, is simply not enough. This middle ground position is angering both sides, Crowder's side as well as Maza's side. How YouTube will handle this, we will know in a few days. What else is happening in the world of tech? Peloton, which is the smart exercise bike and treadmill company, last valued at a whopping $4 billion, is filing for an IPO. As you know, these bikes cost about $2,000 each. In Bitcoin world, Facebook is creating an independent foundation to govern its forthcoming cryptocurrency. According to a report on The Information, the social media giant has courted dozens of financial institutions and other tech companies to pay about $10 million each to join. And finally, in news coming out of the United States, apparently, United States consumers spend more time on average using their mobile devices than they do watching their televisions. According to a new report, the average US adult will spend 3 hours 43 minutes a day on mobile devices, about 10 minutes more than they do spending watching television. This is quite terrifying and quite frankly a meteoric rise, because only about 5 years ago, the average US adult watched nearly 2 hours more TV than they spent on their phones, and in 5 years, mobile screens have taken over. Business Insider has reported that there is a scary new hack created by researchers which can accurately guess your password by listening to the sound of your fingers tapping the phone screen. That is absolutely scary. The technique they created was able to guess nearly 3/4 of the 4-digit pins used within 10 tries in one set. Malware can be designed to take advantage of the microphones in handheld devices to compromise users' passwords and pins, according to these researchers based in the University of Cambridge and Sweden's Linköping University. They wrote a paper together about this particular thing. In more tech-related news, Amazon has unveiled a new Prime Air drone. It says within months will start delivering packages. The new device can fly up to 15 miles, deliver packages up to 5 pounds, and get deliveries to customers within 30 minutes. And in more Amazon news, Amazon consumer CEO Jeff Wilkie has said that he's okay with government scrutiny, but the company shouldn't be broken up. And in entertainment meets technology meets Iron Man news, Robert Downey Jr. has vowed to use robotics and artificial intelligence to significantly clean up the earth in the next decade. On Tuesday night, he attended Amazon's new open to the public machine learning, automation, robotics and space, that is ReMars tech conference in Las Vegas as a keynote speaker. And just when the crowd thought, what was Downey there to do? He said at the end of his talk that he was launching a new initiative called Footprint Coalition. Its goal is to use robotics, artificial intelligence and technology to clean up the earth and reverse its carbon footprint in a decade. In some other news coming from around the world, there was a safe sitting unopened in a small museum in Canada for decades. And people thought, oh God, what might be in this? And several people had tried to open the safe. It's like a chest. And nobody had been able to. And there is this one man who was casually visiting that museum in a place called Vermilion. This museum was called Vermilion Heritage Museum in Canada. And he opened it. What was the code? 204060. And what was in it? Well, not much. It contained an old pay sheet and a part of a restaurant order pad from the late 70s. The restaurant pad, included receipts for a mushroom burger and a package of cigarettes. So nobody struck gold there. But speaking of gold, there is a train called Zarin Gold in Russia. What is golden about this? Well, this is the first tourist train which will take about 91 passengers from St. Petersburg heading to Norway, set to go to the north of the Arctic Circle. The trip will take about 11 days and will allow passengers to discover areas which are difficult to access by any other means, according to the organizers. For this inaugural test journey, 91 tourists have come from 7 countries, including the US, Germany, Norway, and Russia. And finally, speaking of Russia, Chernobyl is a new series on HBO, and it is now spiking viewer interest in not just the television show, but also the place itself. There are 40% more bookings to go and see Chernobyl since HBO's miniseries, which only concluded recently. There are a number of day trips available to the site, and people don't have to, you know, worry about radiation anymore because there are safety precautions being taken. And this Ukrainian ghost city is now turning into a bit of a tourist attraction. If you haven't seen Chernobyl, I am told it is a very good show to watch. So that is my second entertainment recommendation to you today. Well, that's it. I think I've covered everything that's happening in the world in about 20-25 minutes. Before I let you go, what was the final tally on Dalal Street today? The Sensex plunged 553 points to close at 39,529, and the Nifty 50 closed 177 points lower to close at 11,843. Until the next time you hear from me, which is going to be first thing in the morning tomorrow with a morning walk down Dalal Street, this is me, Rakesh Sharma, saying thank you for joining us, and do stay with us on moneycontrol.com to be a smart listener and an even smarter investor.
This has been a Money Control presentation.